Welcome to the talk show dedicated to the wine industry. It's All About Wine. With your host, winemaker, cellar master, vineyardist, and tasting expert, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida State's Winery in Land O'Lakes, Florida. Call our guest line at any time during the live show at area code 646-727-3235.
Basically, what we're trying to do on this program is educate people and make wine less confusing and more friendly.
Broadcasting on blogtalkradio.com from coast to coast.
Basser, Kansas.
Deming, New Mexico.
Ithaca, New York.
Knoxville.
Lancaster County, Pennsylvania.
Lexington, Kentucky.
Montana.
Moscow, Idaho.
New Hampshire.
New Mexico.
Santa Rosa.
Sevierville, Tennessee.
South Dakota.
The coast of Maine.
The Commonwealth of Pennsylvania.
Westport, Mass.
You know, we really have had some neat people on the program. I love that. Alba Vineyards.
Blog.10Live.
Boyflip Winery.
Brotherhood.
Camas Prairie Winery.
Candia Vineyards.
Hello, the Burgesses.
Eagle Springs Winery.
Flathead Lake Winery.
Free the Grapes.
Grapesandwine.cal.cornell.edu.
Heritage Vineyards and Winery.
Hershey Harrisburg Wine Country.
Holyfield Vineyard and Winery.
Hummingbird Ridge Winery.
Toy Soy of Wine.
Prairie Berry.
Rainborn Wines.
Rocky Top Wine Trail.
Sheila Lauer Vineyards and Winery.
Southwest Wines.
Haber Hill.
Ten Spoon.
University of Kentucky Extension.
Vineyard at Hershey.
Vivac Winery.
Walt Vineyard.
Westport Rivers.
Wine Flower.
And around the world.
TheDriftingWinemaker.com. I just arrived in Bali about 3 days ago.
All About Wine is on.
If you have any questions or anything to talk about, we will be more than happy to talk to you about or search it for you or try to find information for you out there, because there is a lot of information out there about wine.
We do occasionally get off topic.
Del Boar Winery.
The most well-known haunted winery in the Midwest.
I've heard voices at the winery.
Call area code 646-727-3235 and let's talk about wine on air. And now, wine enthusiast and industry representatives, All About Wine is on. Here is your host, Ron.
Thank you. Oh, they're so happy. It's so nice here in Florida. Actually, it's nice up the East Coast. Mike has got a cold. I don't want him to talk too much because, you know, you feel miserable when you try to talk. He went down to Texas and got sicker.
Something like that.
You know, I have to tell you, though, I was talking to my sister. She lives up in Missouri. And I was talking to my sister a couple of days ago, and she is a listener of the program also, so hi, sis. And she said, Mike did a good job. I said, yes, he did. And she said that was very enjoyable. She's heading down to Texas second week in April, visit some family and friends down there. And I said, you want to report from there? And she goes, no. She said, I couldn't beat Mike. He did such a nice job. So there you go.
It's a lot of fun. It's a lot of fun, and I told some people at work, you know, what I did and stuff, and they go, oh, I bet you got free wine and all that, and I go, actually, no, I think I got a free tasting from one of them. Thank you very much. But as far as the wine, I was like, you know, I'll take that. Here's my credit card.
Yeah, so, I know. Yeah, the All About Wine name isn't big enough yet.
Well, I mean, and I didn't go into it saying, you know, hey, if I tell you about this, you know, let's work something out. I didn't do any of that. I just came in as a customer and told them who I was and what I did, and which is very little. But and I was working on a report, and it worked out pretty good. I mean, you know, it was a lot of fun. And
you did a good job on reporting, and it was heard out there by at least one, and I'm sure others. So very good. Oh, good job again.
Good. Oh, thank you. Yeah, it was enjoyable. I guess I need to go get our what time is it? I have no idea. There it is. I can go get our guest and bring her on. We'll be right back.
All right.
Cool. Thank you.
Excuse me. We have a guest. CC Pete is actually her name. She is from Cellar Door Winery in Lincoln, Bill, Maine. What happened was that Lori Smith came in to visit us at the winery, I guess it was about a month ago now, and she works at Cellar Door Winery in the summer. She works in the tasting room, and she was actually my wife, engineer, was in there. I wasn't in that day, and she was telling me about the program. She goes, oh, you need to call the winery. They are great. They would love to be on with you and all that. I tried to call, and I couldn't get a hold of them. This is about a month ago, 4-5 weeks ago. Tried to call a couple times. I sent a couple of emails, no answers, no return calls. I tried again, no answers, no return calls. I again tried about 3 weeks ago. I called on a Monday, and somebody answered. And I'm going, yay. And what is happening there, what happened was they closed from December 25th through April the 8th. So I was just lucky to happen to catch someone at the winery that day, and they were able to come on and talk to me. So I have emailed her since then. Cece is the assistant winemaker. Her husband, Aaron, also does duties of making wine. And so they're closed down this time of year in Maine. They're just right off the coast, just north of Portland, off the coast, about the middle of Maine. I looked up the place on a map. So they were right in that area. And I'm sure it's probably very cold. Oh, she's in the green room, it looks like. So let's go over and get Cece out here, and we'll talk to her about the winery. Hello, Cece. Thanks for joining us tonight. And welcome to All About Wine.
Hi. How you doing?
I'm doing really well. And yourself?
I am doing well. It's warm, but it's raining. It's good.
Oh, well, that's better than snow,
I know. It's a strange winter we've been having here.
You're not getting a whole lot of snow?
No. We had 2 years of intense snow where I think people actually left the state of Maine because of it. And then this winter, we were relieved of it. It's been warm and amazing, and it's like 55 degrees today and raining. So
wow.
This has been a very strange winter.
I bet the ski resorts. I had a couple down visit the winery a few days ago from Vermont. And I was talking to them. I said, how's the weather? And they said, it's horrible. We're not getting any snow. And they said the resorts are hurting for
I think the ski resorts are probably not doing as well. But but I don't ski, so.
He said that the only reason people go up to Maine and Vermont, New Hampshire, is because of skiing. Otherwise, there's nobody there anyway. So without the snows, and they said it's just there's nobody there.
pretty quiet. But our tasting room closes this time of year for a couple of months to sort of regenerate, regroup, and get ready for the next season. So we get to clean up and, redo the floors and get everything ready and rocking for the next season. So this is our slow time in the tasting room.
Yeah, I can imagine with, people not wanting to travel. But if you're getting 55-degree weather, people, jump in the cars and head up there. So maybe. So Cellar Door Winery, how did it come about? A little bit of history. What's the name and why you're there? And before I go any further, I looked up Cellar Door Winery on Catch Wine, which I use for a lot of stuff, and I noticed two locations. Do you have a satellite?
Soon to be three.
Oh.
And I'll talk a little bit about that. But, so right now we have the winery and tasting room in Lincolnville. And then we have a tasting room in Rockport, about 10 miles away, sort of a gateway to the winery because, the Lincolnville's kind of tucked in the hills in the middle, away from the coast. And then we are opening a new tasting room this summer in Portland, which is just a little 2-hour hop to Boston. So that is going to be so much fun. Lots of events there, lots of concerts and all kinds of fantastic stuff that's going to go on at that new location. But the wine is all made up in Lincolnville, where my husband and I work. So, A little bit of history. Let's see. So the previous owners started the winery back in the 90s, and it was sort of their retirement plan. And they had been to Tuscany, and they saw this beautiful property, and it's 68 acres on the mid-coast of Maine, this gorgeous rolling hills in between Levin Cellar and Cameron Mountain. I mean, it's old 200-year-old barn, just beautiful. And so they started a little winery there, very small, about 1,000 cases, 1,800 cases. And then about 10 years in, realized that it wasn't really retirement. So they decided, they were also artists, and so they decided to sell and really retire. And Bettina Dalton, she used to be with Fidelity Investment for 21 years, and she, a friend told her the winery was up for sale, and she had always wanted to own a small business, and she had just finished treatment for breast cancer and wanted a change. So she decided to retire from Wall Street, and she bought a small winery in Maine, and that was in 2007, and my husband and I were from Maine, but we went out west to study winemaking in Walla Walla, Washington, and we were home on a spring break in 2007. Right after she bought it, we came home in March, and Aaron's mom was like, hey, there's this winery in Camden, you should just go say hi. So we came and said hi, and we just kept in touch with her, and when Aaron graduated from, he went to the Center for Enology and Viticulture in Walla Walla, when he graduated, he contacted her and said, hey, we hear there's a wine guild in Maine now. Anyone who's hiring, we'd love to come home. And we came home in August of 2008, and we've been there ever since. So we started out making 1,800 cases in the basement of a 200-year-old barn, and now we are up in a Bettina has 1,500 square foot facility, or 50,000 square foot facility of beautiful winemaking. So it's, you know, tanks and barrel rooms, temperature and humidity controlled barrel rooms, and it drains, you know, some pretty amazing upgrades from the basement of a 200-year-old barn, and we're making about 13,000 cases of wine now.
Wow.
So your next question is going to be, where are you getting your grapes? So we have replanted the entire vineyard. It takes a lot of patience to figure out what's going to grow in Maine. So we have, since 2008, we've ripped up the vineyard a couple of times. We did a big replanting in 2008 and 2009, and we've done a couple of smaller replantings of things that just didn't work out. And now we're currently at Marquette, Frontenac Blanc, and Frontenac Gris, the University of Minnesota hybrids, and then Lacadie Blanc, which is one of the popular grapes up in Nova Scotia right now. So that's what we're planting. That's what's growing right now, and they're doing really well. And from that, we're making traditional method sparkling wine. So we have our rosé, a Brut rosé, and we have a Brut Blanc de Blanc that's about to be released this summer. So we're really, really excited about that. But that's just a small little 5 acres, and only about half of it is currently in full production. So we have a little ways to go on that, and we've been working it. So we, of course, Aaron and I studied in Walla Walla, Washington, so we get the majority of our grapes from Washington State.
Mm.
We contract with vineyards there. They ship us the grapes on, you know, 20-ton tractor-trailer trucks in half-ton boxes, and we crush it, sort it, do it all right here. Get a little from California and upstate New York as well, but right now our primary source is Washington.
Oh, okay.
So, yeah.
Well, yeah, you covered a whole bunch of little bit of things I usually ask about, but not in detail. So we'll readdress some of those things here. The vineyard. Let's start out there. It says, you know, I've got myself my little magic book, the 2016 Wines and Wines Directory. It says 6 acres. Is that still about right?
We've ripped up a lot. I think currently planted is about 5 to 5.5. I think last year we ripped up a little bit. Usually when we rip something out, we replant. Last year we ripped a few rows out, and I don't think we've replanted that yet. So I think we're at about 5 acres planted, and about maybe 2.5 to 3 is actually fully producing, though I know the Lacadie is going to produce a full crop this year. So I'd have to ask the vineyard manager what his projection is for how many acres are actually going to produce this year.
So what are you actually growing there in Maine? I know you ran through it quickly and I didn't have time to make a note.
This is really exciting times because, you know, I mean, you figure out what's going to grow in every state and it just takes a lot of patience. And so, you know, we tried, you know, when we first got here, the previous owners had planted, you know, Niagara and Concord, of course, the usual.
Right.
But that wasn't what we wanted to make wine from. And so we tore that out and we tried, first of all, we tried, you know, some of the University of Minnesota hybrid and then a couple of others, Sabal and Cayuga. But those didn't really survive our winters as well. But the Minnesota hybrids have lived really, really well. So the Marquette is the only red we have planted. And that's a Minnesota hybrid that parentage a large portion of it is Pinot Noir. So it has the potential to make a red wine with tannin, though we choose to make sparkling rosé with it. And the cool thing about the Marquette, unlike Pinot Noir, where you press it right away and the juice is clear, so you get a white, you know, Blanc Noir, you're white. We press it, and it's this gorgeous, gorgeous pink. The color itself is very dark. So we're able to press it right away and not get the, you know, the tannin from keeping it on the skins to get the pink color. We get this beautiful, beautiful color, and we press it the day we pick it. So no astringency from the skins. So all we get is the beautiful fruit, all that great cranberry, pomegranate amazingness, but without any bitterness from the skins. It's really a gorgeous color. And then depending on the vintage, sometimes we do 100% Marquette for our rosé, and sometimes we blend it with some of the whites from the vineyard to kind of round that out. So we have, that's our only red that we do. And then we have Frontenac Gris, which is another Minnesota hybrid, and then one that's not technically a grape yet, but it's an offshoot of Frontenac Gris called Frontenac Blanc. The difference between the two, if you look at the actual grapes, is the Frontenac Gris has kind of pinkish skins like a Pinot Gris, and the Frontenac Blanc doesn't. It looks like a white grape. So that's really the only two differences. Chemistry-wise, they're always the same. They both taste pretty similar when we do them. So we usually just pick them together, crush them together, press them together. And so that ends up becoming the base of our Blanc de Blanc. And the Lacadie Blanc, which we're really excited about, that's something that Aaron and I went up to Nova Scotia a few years back, and that's what they're growing up there quite a bit. And we wound up at this place called Lacadie Vineyards, and he's making some of the most beautiful traditional method sparkling wines we've ever tried, and it's all Lacadie Blanc grapes. So, voila, this is an amazing, great variety, perfect chemistry. You know, the Minnesota hybrids have beautiful flavors and aromas. They're really vinifera-like. There's none of that foxy, muscatty, you know, nothing that would ever suggest this is a hybrid. They really taste and smell like vinifera, but they're really acidic. So, you know, we have to make sure to put them through malolactic fermentation to bring down the acid. But the good thing about them being so acidic is that's what's great for sparkling wine. So that's what we've decided to do. And then the Lacadie Blanc ripens perfectly. You know, you get your 18 bricks and your, you know, 8 to 9 grams per liter acid. And, you know, it's like it's perfect for sparkling wine without even putting it through malolactic fermentation. So we're really excited about that grape. And we got a small crop last year, just enough to see what the chemistry would be like. But this year we should be able to get a full crop off of it. So those are the four main varieties that we're growing right now, and we're really excited about them. It's an exciting time because not really much is known about growing grapes in Maine, and there's only a handful of us right now, you know, experimenting with what will work. And, you know, it takes 3 to 5 years to get a crop once you rip up a vine and replant. So it takes a big decision to decide, okay, that grape didn't work, let's pull that out. So this has been a long process, that's for sure.
So these are all cold hardy then, obviously from University of Minnesota and Nova Scotia. So it's not going to be affected by if you get really nasty winters there. So that's
right. Normally we're pretty mild winters, but we've had a couple really bad ones, and that's where the Sauval Blanc died one winter from that. And it's so there's, you know, some of those varieties just didn't work because every now and then we get like negative 24. Ooh. So we, yeah, the Minnesota hybrids can get down to, I think, something like negative 25, negative 30. They're
yeah.
really cold hardy. They're
yeah,
pretty
they
amazing.
Are. Yeah.
So we're hoping, you know, we haven't gotten like a super cold winter with the Lockety yet, but we'll see on that one because the chemistry on that one's perfect. But the Minnesota hybrids, they can take a beating, that's for sure.
Yeah, they can. And your opening picture on your website shows the Saval grapes, though. They have a little sign there. So
I know. It's a beautiful photograph.
You need
photograph.
To get a little magic marker and cross that out there. Yeah.
I know. We just tore that out last summer. It didn't make it through the last really bad winter.
Yeah. Well, speaking of winters and summers, what is your weather like? I mean, give me the summer highs and lows and winter highs and lows and, you know, give me parameters of what you face there with weather.
Yeah, our biggest problem in Maine is lack of, you know, sunlight growing days. You know, we get a lot of rain some summers, and some summers are great, not too rainy, but we do get some summers that are a lot of rain. And, you know, that's the big problem with that is dealing with mold, botrytis, rot, that kind of stuff. Mm-hmm. We have a very short growing season. The winters, you know, we could get our first snow in October. And
whoa.
I've seen a foot of snow drop on April 1st. So
oh.
we it can be pretty rough. That's why we need these cold hardy hybrids. But and it doesn't get as hot here as it does in Minnesota. So one of the challenges for us, the Marquette does really well and the Lockety Blanc, they do well at ripening when we need them to. You know, we harvest them, you know, 1st of October. We haven't gotten our first frost yet. We're doing okay. The Frontenac Blanc in Greece so far, we might need to work on, you know, maybe cropping back and getting a smaller crop load because we get to the second week in October and, okay, frost warning, time to pick. We have a really hard time getting that one to get as ripe as we want it, get the TA down before we have to pick it. So that one, you know, we do a lot of blending with that. We end up having to, you know, oh, no Blanc de Blanc this year. We're going to blend it with the Marquette to bring the acid down. So that's a harder one. And I think the challenge with that is going to be just having to deal with getting a smaller crop off of it. You know, if we cut back some of it, then maybe what we keep will ripen faster than if we keep a full load. But so yeah, the short growing season is our biggest challenge. Definitely getting things to ripen. But then, you know, those years that we get a lot of rain, that's where we start watching, because making traditional method sparkling wine, you really can't deal with mold, rot, botrytis. Like that. You need nice, clean, perfect fruit because you can't, you know, when you're making traditional method sparkling wine, you can't use a lot of very little sulfur, if any. Otherwise, it won't go to the second fermentation in bottle. So we have to be really careful. So it has to be really pristine, perfect fruit to be able to make sparkling wine. So it's a challenge, but we've gotten 2012, 13, 14. We've had four vintages. Right now, three in bottle, and one that's going to be bottled this year. So we're doing pretty good. We do a general, we do our first fermentation on it, and then it does a bottle fermentation, and then it ages on the lees for 18 months or so before we disgorge and release it. So it's a long process too. It's like a 3-year process for sparkling wine. So we just released our very first 2012 vintage. We released that this past summer. So it's a long time in coming for that one.
Yeah. What is your summer highs and lows and winter highs and lows then?
Oh, goodness. So summers are generally, I mean, I guess I'm not looking at a chart or anything, but, you know, it doesn't generally get above, you know, 80 here.
Oh.
If it hits 90, we're all dying because it's
wow.
so humid. We have very humid climate here. So we're coastal too. It gets hotter inland, but you know we're coastal, so it doesn't get quite as hot here. You know, every now and then we'll get a 90 degree day, and we're all sweltering, dying. But generally, not really higher in August. We might get something in the 80s. In June and July, you're looking at 60s, 70s for our highs.
Wow.
So we don't get hot. It doesn't get hot. Winter, like this winter. We had a couple cold nights in the teens, but otherwise it was pretty steady, you know, 20s, 30s all winter long. And then the last two winters before that, it was brutally cold, dumped snow on us, like a foot of snow once a week. I mean, the last two winters were so awful. So, but again, snow cover is a good thing. You know, the worst thing you can get is no snow cover, and then it hits negative 24, and then your vines have no protection. So,
right. So
you know, the snow is actually kind of a good thing, I guess. But yeah, it varies, and I guess that's kind of the frustrating thing is you can't really. There's no predictable main weather. I guess the saying is, if you don't like the weather today, just wait. Tomorrow will be different.
Yeah, it'll change on you. What? Before we leave the vineyard talking about it, what type of soil do you have up there?
Now this is where we should probably be talking to either my husband or the vineyard manager. But
I'm not trying to put you on the spot. I just, yeah, if you don't know, that's okay.
It's definitely wet. It's not the best, you know, it's not the driest soil in our particular site. And I know, our vines can't go very deep because we do have clay pack. So that's a challenge. Our vines, our roots kind of, they can only go to a certain depth and then they just sort of spread. And that's a challenge for us. You know, we need a little rockier soil, but we're making do with, you know, the vines were already, you know, we already had, the vineyard was there when Bettina purchased the winery. So we're making do with our site, but I would say it's not, the most ideal soil type for growing grapes. So, but the cool thing is, if we can grow it on this property in this site with this kind of clay pack, grapes can grow in Maine.
Yeah. Well, the clay, I mean, that's just like the whole country basically has clay underneath. It just depends on how far down before you hit
how
it.
Deep.
So,
Yeah.
So, okay, let's move into the winery. Stainless steel or oak?
Both. So the cool thing about not being able to grow it all yourself is we can make whatever we want. So we make a very broad range of wines. Aaron and I joke that this is our PhD of winemaking. If we haven't made it, we try it. Let's try it. Sure, why not? Let's do Sauvignon this year. So we play around with all kinds of things. Our reds are all done. We age those all in barrel. And we make everything from, you know, Pinot Noir, Dolcetto, Petit Sirah, Cab, you know, all the basic border varieties. We make all of them, and then we do all kinds of different blends. The reds generally age in barrel about 16 to 18 months before we bottle. Whites, we do a combination of oak and stainless steel. So we have a nice dry stainless steel fermented and aged Sauv Blanc, another one called Stone Tower that's a Semi and Sauvignon Blanc blend. You know, all of our sweet whites are steel, so Riesling, Chenin Blanc, Cayuga, those are all steel wines. And then we do some barrel-aged whites, barrel-fermented and aged whites. So we have Chardonnay, Pinot Gris, which traditionally is not done in barrel, but we've found it's quite popular. We do it in barrel and stir the lees on that, but neutral barrels, no new oak on that one. So you're not getting the flavor, but you're getting that surly, creamy, leesy quality from stirring the lees every other week on the Pinot Gris. And then Viognier and Chardonnay are both kind of a combination of new and used oak. We did an Albarino the last 2 years for the first time. So that's kind of another new variety we've been working with. We found some in Washington and in California. So we did a fun little blend of that. But we do a combination. We sort of play with everything. Our vineyard wines, we put those through malolactic fermentation in neutral barrels, so we're not picking up flavor, but we're doing some lees stirring on those as well, and trying to pick up a nice, leesy, creamy quality to the base wines before we put them in bottle for their second fermentation.
So you use oak, and you're not using alternatives. You're not using chips or dust or slots or anything like that. It is actually oak barrels.
No, oak barrels, yeah. There should be some pictures on our website, but we use French, American. The French cooper we work with in Bordeaux called Marchive, they also do, they take American oak and ship it to them. They cooper it and toast it there. So that's our Pennsylvania oak. And then we have an American cooper, EBC, does our Kentucky American oak. And they're all different flavor profiles. It's wonderful. And then in the past, we've even used some that we have a cooper here in the United States that they take used barrels, they scrape them out, and then re-toast them. And so they're re-coopered, so there's no – the tannin is gone, but there you get all the toasty qualities, the caramel, vanilla, and all that stuff from toasting the wood again. So those are kind of fun to play with too. But yeah, no, we use all oak barrels, no oak alternatives.
And the variety of it sounds like, too. You're not staying with just one profile or something. It seems like you're – getting a whole bunch of different types in there, so that sounds like
it. Yeah, you kind of have to when you make, you know, 20 or so different kinds of wines. You really can't just do one flavor profile. That'd get really boring. So if we're gonna do this many styles of wines, we kind of want to play around with them and you know, see what's best for each type. You know, like our Kentucky American oak is best on like Petite Sirah, Petite Verdot. They do really well with that. You know, our French oak is better for like our Cab or Cab Franc. They do a lot better with our French oak. So, and the flavors are really different. It's kind of fun to do barrel tastings and see the difference between the different barrels. You know, the French, lots of vanilla flavors coming through, and the Kentucky barrels, super chocolate. And they're completely different flavors from the different coopers toasting them. So it's kind of cool.
Yeah, I'm looking at some of your pictures here of the vineyard. I noticed you net migratory bird path there. Do you have to do that netting?
Oh, my goodness. We have not just birds. The birds are pretty bad. The little sparrows will pick the heck out of them. But it's the raccoons and the turkeys. They will eat. This is so embarrassing, but our first crop, we lost completely. We didn't net. We used, like, noisemakers and dummy foxes and coyotes, and you know, we tried to do scare tactics, and
right.
we had an entire crop one day, and the next day we came in and the raccoons had and turkeys had literally eaten it, just picked the entire vineyard clean.
Wow.
So I mean, they and the raccoons, we actually put out cams so we could watch what was happening. The raccoons have these wonderful little fingers. They pick, like, even when we put the nets up, we have to watch the raccoons. They pick through, like, they get through the net. Like, if we don't pull the net out far enough away from the grape clusters, they'll get in there and still pick them off. They're, oh, my goodness. Oh, yeah.
Oh,
just learning how to tie our net tight enough and away from the grapes enough to keep the wildlife away. Because I don't know if you can see from the pictures, but it's not a nice, wide, open plain. It's this 5-acre vineyard tucked into woods. So like, you know, 10 feet from the last vine is forest, and all those, you know, we've got deer and moose and raccoons and turkeys, and they all want ripe, delicious grapes.
Sweet
They're
grapes.
Yummy.
Oh my gosh. That's amazing.
Oh, yeah.
Raccoons.
And turkeys. The two big culprits.
Well, like Long Island, we talked to a winery there, and they said they have to net because they're in a migratory bird path. And if they don't net, then, you know, the birds fly through and strip them and fly on. But
yep.
You're the first I've ever – we talked to this, that the raccoons were coming in. That's something.
Yeah, they're pretty bad. They're pretty bad, yep.
Oh, geez. That's horrible. That's labor intensive. I understand that, but that's
it
horrible.
Is, but we've learned how to do it. You know, we've kind of, it's been trial and error, but, you know, we got it down. They didn't touch our vineyard in the last few years, so.
Oh, hey, I see. Yeah, the picking underneath it, flipping the nets up and picking underneath. Yeah, I see that. Oh, wow.
I'm actually testing the vineyard.
Yeah, I know. I bet I can just imagine the looks on your face when you saw that first crop that was stripped bare.
Oh, it was so depressing. But, you know, Aaron and I, where we studied in Walla Walla, they all had to net. They had a lot of birds out there, and they had to net every year, every vineyard nets out there. So,
wow.
So we were kind of used to it, yeah.
Huh. Well, that's I don't think too much about netting, But then I start seeing a lot of pictures from different wineries we've talked to and different things people have said, and it's amazing the number of wineries that really do have to net because of wildlife and, you know, the little plastic owl sitting there on top of the post doesn't do anything. So
Nope.
So you mentioned your wines a couple of times here. Let's go through. I really like to, you know, quickly on each one of these. I've got your website again up here. And each one of these, the Cantina Rosa, that's made from what?
Oh, goodness. I would have to be looking at that right now. Depends on which vintage is up there. I want to say that one is, is it not on the website?
Oh, here it is. Okay, I just clicked
okay.
on it.
I want to
Barbera
say that's the one with San Giovese,
Carignan,
yep.
Grenache.
Yep.
Wow, that's a...
So the way we work, and this is kind of fun and interesting, but we ship in a bunch of different grape varieties, and we crush them, ferment them separate, and, you know, for the first 9 months or so, they all sit in their own separate barrels as individual beings. And then when we go to do blending trials, it becomes this sort of Rubik's Cube of blending where, you know, okay, so we know we're going to probably make somewhere between 8 and 10 different blends out of this. Okay, so we know we're going to do these ones. Let's try that. Okay, those are perfect. Now let's see what we have left and work on these blends. Oh, wait a minute, hold on. This needs a little of that. So now we got to take from one of these blends over here and bring it over here. And it ends up being like this really interesting. So sometimes we wind up with some varieties that, you know, you wouldn't really think to put together. But that's why it's great. Cantina Rosa, that's our house red, our kitchen red. You know, that's sort of a nice, easy sipping, non-complex, low-end, you know, inexpensive red wine that you can just have on any weeknight. You know, it's, I think it's like what is it, like $10 a bottle or something? So it's just
yeah,
a nice, low-end, easy sipping red. Yep.
Yeah, 12, it had listed here, 12 a bottle. But you can have so many different ones, though. You must have... A lot, 2 dozen stainless steel tanks that these things are all sitting in while you're getting ready
oh
to do
goodness.
That.
Oh, my goodness. We have, let's see, so we bottle, we have a mobile bottling truck that comes down from Ontario twice a year.
Oh.
They come in May and then in July. So we do all of our reds in May, and that would be the ones that have been in barrel for a year and a half. And then we do all of our whites from the previous harvest. So this coming July, we'll do all of our 2015 whites in July. So, you know, our whites take up a lot of the tanks, and then we have to have the tank space available to bring our reds out of barrel when we're getting ready to bottle. So we do, we have, let's see, we have 5 2,000-gallon white tanks. We have 8 about 2,200, like 8-ton red fermenters that when we're not in crush time, we can fill those and use those as storage vessels as well. And they're all jacketed, so we can do all our cold stabilization and all that stuff in them. And then we have a bunch of, over the years, of course, you know, when we first got here in 2008, there were a bunch of, you know, 500-gallon tanks, a couple thousand-gallon tanks. And so over the years, as we've grown from 1,800 cases to 13,000 cases, every time we grow, we bring in a new round of tanks. So, and we've sold off some as we haven't needed them, but we have a wide variety of tanks at this point, you know, ranging from 130-gallon variable capacity small tanks all the way up to, you know, 8-ton red fermenters that hold about 2,200 gallons of wine once it's pressed. So we have a lot of different, and then, you know, of course, Demi Johnson carboys for what won't fit somewhere else. But so, you know, we have a wide variety of tanks to play around with. And, you know, when you're working with this many different varieties, it's like playing with a Rubik's Cube in that winery.
Yeah, I can imagine. You just everything stainless steel, too? You haven't went plastic?
No plastic. I mean, we have, of course, our yeast buckets and stuff that we prepare yeast in. Those are plastic.
Yeah.
But all of our tanks, we used to do back before we started doing our reds in tank with, you know, whole pump over action, we did our reds. First, we did them in 3/4-ton plastic bins, like, you know, those punch down bins. So that's how we started, 3/4-ton bins. And then as we grew, we moved up to the 2-ton stainless steel bins because you could get 2 tons in the same footprint as you would be able to get 3/4 of a ton. So we moved to those, and then 2 harvests ago, we finally moved to the full 8-ton fermenters. So now we do all of our reds in tank with pump overs instead of bins with punch downs. So no more. I don't think we have plastic anything anymore. I think that was the only thing we had at the time.
I noticed, I was looking while we were talking, I looked at your Prince Valiant, and I noticed you have that blended with Carmenere. Where are you getting your Carmenere?
I would have to look at my data sheet for that, but somewhere in Washington. We purchased from so many different places. I would have to, and each vintage from different places, but that was Washington. I want to say Columbia Valley, maybe Wallow Slope, but I can't. Without having my data sheets in front of me, I can't answer that one right now. But well, Washington State.
I knew that Carmenere was grown in Chile. I mean, that's basically the home of it. But I know that Washington has been planting some Carmenere, but I didn't realize they were having enough available to be able to ship to you. I think that's just interesting. I never realized that.
Yeah, it's kind of fun. When we were out in Washington, I worked for a winery called Tertulia Cellars, a wonderful small winery in Walla Walla, and he made this gorgeous Carmenere, a small lot Carmenere that was fantastic. So a lot of times we'll look for it, you know, we'll say, hey, can you find anything cool? Well, you know, we'll just get a small lot of it. Like maybe we'll only get 4 tons or 2 tons of something, and then we can use it as a blender. You know, the big stuff, the Cab, the Merlot, Syrah, we'll get, 16 tons of that, and that will be the base of our wines. But then we can get these fun little varieties, throughout the season. They'll be like, oh, hey, we came across an extra 2 tons of this. Do you want to try it? That stuff, we wouldn't be able to get like 16 tons of Carmenere. They're not probably growing enough for that, but enough to get a little for blending. Yep.
Your Zinfandel comes out of Washington also, or is that one of those California?
The Zinfandel was California, and that I believe is, if it's not sold out, it's really close. That's that was the 2011 Zinfandel. Yeah, we used to get that out of California.
Yeah. So so you mentioned that might be sold out, and I've noticed some of them here that were sold out. Does that mean that they might be taken off the list and you're going to be doing something else? Or from what you're saying, you do anything and everything, and, it's just whatever whatever you feel like.
Yeah, it's not necessarily feeling like, it's what we can get each year. As you know, like some years are really bad years and some years are really good years. Like, 2011 was probably the worst year in history for California and Washington.
Mm-hmm.
Cold, rainy, it was hard to get a lot of things that year. The last couple of years have been great. So it really depends on what we can get. There's certain things that we'll probably make every year. Ned said red, we'll probably make every year. And that'll most likely be a Bordeaux blend of Cab Franc, Merlot, something along those lines. So there's some that we know we're going to make each year. And then other things, if we don't make it, we don't make it. And then, we made Petit Verdot, a tiny, tiny, small batch of it years ago, and it sold out really quickly. I think we only made like 60 cases, and it sold out and gone, and everyone loved it, but we couldn't find it again for a few years. And then finally, a couple of years ago, we found some again, and we started making it again. So it's kind of fun because you may see something you really like, and then you won't see it again for a few years. But it's kind of, if you can't grow it yourself, you sort of have to be at the mercy of what you can find and what they're growing, and if it's a good year and if it's a bad year and they didn't get enough, then you're not getting that this year. So yeah, it's challenging, but also exciting because we're not really bound by anything specific that we have to do either. So we can just sort of go with it.
I noticed you make a lot of blends with the Cabernet Franc. Why are not you making a varietal just of that alone? I love a Cabernet Franc. That's why I'm asking.
We've thought about it many times, but it just, it works as such a beautiful blender. And, you know, whenever we get the Cab Franc in and we start our blending trials, you know, for example, like our Ned Said Red always does really well, the Cab Franc with a little bit of something else. You know, some years with, you know, half and half Merlot Cab Franc, some years maybe Cab Franc with some Cab and Carmenere. You know, it really depends on the vintage. And, you know, Aaron's really, really big into blending to find the flavor profiles he's looking for. So unless a variety is absolutely perfect and complex enough to stand on its own, we always blend. Even our varietal wines, you know, you'll notice even our varietal wines have a little something else in them to give them that perfect complexity that he's looking for. It's, you know, there's wine growers and more of the winemaker style, and Aaron is amazing at creating artistic blends. It's fascinating to watch. You know, he's amazing at it. So, you know, we could just do everything as a straight up varietal wine, but it's more fun to play with it and let all these beautiful different complex layers of flavors and aromas come through in a final blend.
I know that I blend all my wine, so I completely understand. I really do. I just was looking at the whites too. Most of those are blended. The Saint Delore is the port.
The Saint Delore, yeah, that's the fortified. We can't call it a port.
Well, yeah, you're right. The port style.
Right. So that's our fortified wine, and instead of either leaving residual sugar after fermentation or back sweetening with sugar, we're in Maine. So we decided to take some maple syrup to add the back sweetening to it. And we were really excited about the richness and the, like, just the on the palate, what the maple syrup did to the wine. And then of course you add the brandy. We do unaged brandy for the fortifying, and it's kind of cool. I don't think anyone else is doing it probably, but it was really neat. So,
well, yeah. Maple syrup, it only makes sense. I mean, look where you are.
I know. It's like pouring out of the trees at us as we speak.
That's right. Yeah, I mean, you can just hook it right to the tree, to the tank almost. I mean, it just...
A little more difficult than that, but yes.
the Sweetheart, 100% Concord is... that almost seems like that would be the taste of a fresh grape popping in your mouth.
It tastes like Welch's grape juice with alcohol.
Oh, yeah.
So if you've ever poured a glass of Welch's grape juice, imagine that with a tiny little kick of alcohol.
Uh-huh.
It's only 10%. It's like 9 or 10% alcohol. It's not very alcoholic. But, yep, that's straight-up grape juice right there.
And then... The Treasure, it just looks like another one that you're playing with here with some maple syrup.
Well, that one's, I mean, now you're looking at two main treasures, Wild Maine Blueberries and maple syrup. I mean, you know, that's, if you're going to make a dessert wine, that's where you got to go. We do two, I don't believe we're sold out of our dry blueberry wine, but when in Maine, you must make a blueberry wine. So we we make two. One's a dry red style oak-aged blueberry wine, and then the other is the Treasure, which is the blueberry wine with the maple syrup added, and that's we back sweeten it with the maple syrup to bring it to a dessert wine level. So it's one of those wines that you drink like 2 ounces of. You're not gonna hopefully pour, you know, 5 ounce glass of it, but it's a dessert wine. It's
the
very
people
sweet.
Like sweet,
it's like
wine.
Blueberry pie. Yeah,
is it?
It's like drinking blueberry pie.
What's the residual sugar on this?
I believe it's, oh goodness, which one is that one? I believe it's somewhere around maybe 8%, 9%. Yeah.
It is sweet, isn't it? Yeah.
It's sweet. Yeah, it's a very sweet dessert wine. It's definitely meant not as a table wine.
Yeah. It sounds delicious, though. It really does. I'm looking at it just, and the picture with all the little small chocolates sitting around it just really is exciting. So.
Oh, yeah. Well, I mean, we do, you know, you want to talk events and stuff, you should be talking with our amazing owner and operator, Bettina. She's, her events are out of this world. There are food and wine pairing events that are amazing, and cooking classes, and the food and wine in general in all of the events is a really big part of it. And so each of the wines, they try really hard to find some pretty amazing pairings. And, of course, you know, blueberry maple wine with some nice chocolate.
Yeah,
you know, not,
of course, not a bad
afternoon.
Even pancakes.
Exactly, your brunch wine, right?
Yeah, really. The last one here that I was looking at, too, is your vendange.
Yes, that's the one we are so excited about. That's our very first estate-grown traditional method sparkling Brut Rosé. So that's our first vintage that we just released, and it's so exciting. It's a blend of Marquette. Again, I'm going to go see if I can find a bottle here. We blended everything that year. We didn't do a Blanc de Blanc that year. So that one is Frontenac Gris, Frontenac Blanc, Marquette, and Saval. Before we pulled out the Saval, we got a little in there before the winter killed it. It's fun. It's really dry. Brut can be anywhere from 0 to 15 grams per liter dosage, and we did 9. So it's nice, dry, crisp, fresh, very, very vibrant, really nice acidity, and the color is just gorgeous because of the Marquette. We're really excited about it. It was our first attempt at sparkling wine, and we're excited about it.
Yeah, my wife just came by and said, sounds like a place she can go live.
Well, that's just exactly it. You know, a lot of people ask us, why are you, so you're doing this in Maine, but why not just go out to California or Washington if you want to make all those varieties? Because this is home. Maine is, Aaron and I are from Maine. Our families are here. We have a 2-year-old son who we'd love to let hang around his grandparents and, we love having this opportunity to practice our craft here in Maine, doing all of the different styles of wine we want to make, and having an opportunity to live at home. Maine is home, and Midcoast Maine, it's unbelievable.
I've been to Maine. It is a gorgeous, gorgeous state. I was there, though, in the middle of the summer, and so everything is gorgeous in the middle of summer. And then once you go through a tough winter, you go, oh, my gosh.
You've got to really love Maine to stick it through 2 tough winters in a row.
The vendange, is that the only sparkling? I mean, you're talking about all this sparkling you're making. I only see one on the list.
See, here's the thing with sparkling wine. It takes 3 years. So the vendange is our first release, 2012. Our 2013 is about to be disgorged in the next couple of months, so that'll be up for release this summer. So you'll have a Blanc de Blanc. But that's the thing with sparkling wine. We have 4 vintages of sparkling wine. We have 4 vintages of vendange and 3 of Blanc de Blanc. So that's 7 different sparkling wines in bottle ready, but the aging process in bottle takes so long. So we have it. It just hasn't been released yet. That's why this whole project has been, the 2012 is finally released because it takes so long. And so the 2013 will be released this summer. And then, next winter we'll disgorge the 2014s. And, slowly we're kind of building it. But that first one took so long to get to, because first we had to wait to get a crop, and then lost the first crop, and then get another crop, and then you make your base wine, and then you put your base wine in a bottle, and you do your second fermentation, and then it has to age on the lees for at least 15 months for bubble retention. I mean, you can get your bubbles right away, but if you were to disgorge right away, they would dissipate really quickly. So, 15 months is kind of the minimum. We do about 18 months, somewhere around there. And that gives us a really nice soft bubble retention. They don't kind of pop right away as soon as you open the bottle. And so that 18 months, I mean, that's 3 years from harvest to release on a sparkling wine. So it's a long process, a very long process, but it's so worth it. It's just such a beautiful thing to see what we can do with Maine grown fruit that it's super exciting.
I lost my thought there. I was listening to you being so excited about the sparkling wines. are you on a wine trail?
The wine trail, the Maine wine trail?
Yeah. Is there a Maine wine trail? Are you part of that?
Yeah, there's a Maine wine trail. I believe there's even a map. And I know in the Mid-Coast area, there's a tour group that does tours through to several of the Mid-Coast wineries. But there's definitely a Maine wine trail. And if you go to I should have this information, but there's a Maine Wine Guild, and they have, I'm sure on their website, they should have a map of the Maine wine trail. And there's getting to be quite a few of us here in Maine. I think we might be somewhere around 20 now. I mean, not all vineyards. A lot of the wineries still focus on fruit because we, again, have blueberries pouring down mountains at us. But lots of fruit, and a handful of us are experimenting with what will grow for grapes. And I think we're finally beginning to find out what's going to grow well. And it's an exciting time in Maine. Give us another 10, 15 years, and you'll probably see a lot more vineyards growing in Maine.
Yeah, well, you guys are groundbreakers on this and finding out which ones that will grow. And so that is a first big step for anyone who wants to open up and start doing it up there.
Absolutely.
Well, speaking of opening new wineries, the government, Maine and, well, the U.S., we talk about, most people know, but Maine government, you want to hug them, you want to kill them, you want to kiss them, you want to, you know, chop off their heads? How are they?
I don't work with the government and all the rules. Aaron and I make the wine, and, well, fortunately for us, Bettina works with the state very closely, and she's wonderful with them. And a lot of laws have opened up in the almost 8 years that we've been home. When we first moved back, you couldn't ship wine in the state of Maine, and now you can. You couldn't sell wine for on-site consumption in a winery, but you could in the brew pubs, and now, those laws are opening up. There are a lot of contradictory laws between, the cool thing about being in Maine is this is, New England is really big, and Maine, especially with microbreweries and brew pubs, and, no one asks them, where did you grow your hops? Where did you grow your barley? So our guests who visit us, they're kind of open and okay with the fact that we don't grow all of our grapes in our backyard because, the breweries don't either. But there were a lot of, back in the day, there were a lot of contradictory laws when it came to brew pubs versus the wineries. But now that there are more wineries in Maine, you're starting to see a lot of those laws open up and it become a little bit more user-friendly to allow our guests to have a good time and come in and, maybe get a sandwich and have a glass of wine with their lunch or something. So it's kind of nice.
Getting better all the time.
Yeah,
I have to laugh about your comment there about, the brew pubs, where you grow your hops, because one of the first things that people usually ask when they walk in the winery is, where's your vineyard?
Yeah.
No, it's always,
yeah.
Always, yeah.
It's a big thing in the wine industry, but, it doesn't apply anywhere else. We have amazing local coffee roasters, and I'm telling you, they do not grow their coffee beans here. So I think it's a matter of getting consumers to just sort of open up to the fact that you don't have to grow them in your backyard to ship grapes to you and to make a beautiful product. So
yeah, that's funny. I have to comment too. I'm looking at your shipping map here, and oh, by the way, Florida is one of them. Yay! But
yay!
New Hampshire. It says, New Hampshire, except towns of Ellsworth, Millsfield, Monroe, and Sharon. I have never seen that. These towns.
There's dry counties. There's definitely, up at least in New England, I'm sure in the rest of the country as well, but in New England, there's still dry counties where you can't ship or buy alcohol within the borders of that specific county. Yeah, it's...
Towns. Yep. Yeah, that's just amazing. That's
I think
just
Maine was
amazing.
The first state to start prohibition and the last to repeal it. I mean, Maine was pretty strict when it came to alcohol. So we're opening
up. But not
up
as strict
here.
As Utah. Oh my gosh, that's
right.
Utah is just unbelievable. I've done some. I interviewed three or four wineries in Utah there. And if you get an opportunity to go back and listen to their archives on that, and it's just, you go, oh, my gosh, how did they ever survive? I mean, it's amazing.
Oh, I know. I've heard some of the rules about Utah. Nope.
Yeah, it's just absolutely amazing. Mike, do you have any questions for Cece here?
No, I've been looking at the classes. You kind of touched on that a little bit, the pairings and everything. They look really interesting. And no, just very well done. There's a lot of good information, a lot of good things coming up at the winery, definitely. So I just got to encourage everybody to go take a look at the website and get the information. And you do all kinds of good events there, so it's quite busy. It looks like.
Yeah, we have some pretty amazing events. I mean, we had Salt and Pepper come to us. So I mean.
Okay.
I'm not joking. We've had some pretty amazing people come play for us. But yeah, check out our website. We have Facebook and all those social media outlets, and we do some pretty fantastic events. And when our new tasting room opens up down in Portland, for all those people in Boston who want to pop up to Maine for a great event, hop on the Amtrak. It's awesome.
Yeah, there you go. Oh, Amtrak. That's a New England thing there. I have to point out that to everyone listening that Cece and I had corresponding emails a little bit before then, and she asked how long we usually have our guests on. I said anywhere from we've had as short as 20 minutes or as long as 2 hours, and she goes, oh, I can never talk that long. And she's been on talking for an hour now, and I can probably get her to talk for another hour with no problem, but I won't. But
well,
see,
well,
you amaze yourself. Yeah.
You do. If you ask questions, I'll answer them.
Yeah, that's always on. Give us your address, phone number, website, Facebook, Pinterest, everything, any information, anyone out there in the whole wide world wants to get a hold of Cellar Door Winery, they can.
All right. Cellar Door Winery, 367 Youngtown Road, Lincolnville, Maine, 04849. Phone number to call for all these events and fun stuff is 207-763-4478 to schedule tours and all that fun stuff. We have Facebook. I couldn't even begin to tell you that, honestly. I just look up Cellar Door Winery Facebook.
Facebook / Cellar Door.
We have Facebook, and all those links are on our website. So definitely go to www.mainwine.com, and that has all of our fun information and events and links to Facebook and shipping information and wine information and tour information and all kinds of really cool stuff on there.
Now, I need to add something to this, though. Don't call them right now. They're closed. I had a heck of a time getting hold of somebody.
So if you want to email, if you do info@mainwine.com, even in the off season, someone checks that all the time. I mean, we have the tasting room isn't officially open, but we have people working really hard all winter, getting all these fabulous events planned and ready, and keeping our wholesale accounts happy. And so there's people down in the tasting room offices getting everything set and ready. So if you want to call and ask questions or send an email, someone will be happy to answer you or to return a call or to return an email.
Very good. Oh, one other thing I forgot to ask, and I just remembered. Are you in the AVA up there?
I do not believe Maine has an AVA yet.
Okay.
I think we're technically considered, we're Maine. So we're not, when we do an estate wine, it's Maine. I think maybe there's a New England AVA, but there's no specific AVAs in Maine yet. We're not big enough for that yet.
I didn't, well, I didn't think you were designated yet, but I was curious on it. So, well.
Yeah. No, we just say Maine when we do a Maine wine.
Which pretty much sums it up right there anyway. Cece, thank you so very much for taking time out this evening and talking with us. It was fantastic. Very informative. A lot of fun. And people out there, it sounds great. Check on their website. They have shipping information there. If you're in a dark purple state, then they can ship it directly to you. Just get on there and try some of those, well, that maple syrup wine and blueberries. Oh, my gosh, I may have to order that. That sounds so good. So thank you very much for taking your time tonight. It was great, and best of luck. And sometime in the future, hopefully I'll be up in that part of the world, and I'll swing by and say hey.
Fantastic. Well, thank you for having me. And when you come on up, come say hi, and you can meet everyone else.
And we'll do. Thank you very much now.
All right, thanks. Bye-bye.
Thank you. Good night. Thank you.
Wow. That
works there. Okay.
I am so amazed about all the stuff they do.
Mm-hmm.
That, you know, all the different ones they do, it's just like they're, her and Aaron can't really decide what they want to do, so they say, well, let's try this, let's try that, and it sounds like they're just playing and coming up with a whole bunch of neat wines. I mean, it's just,
right.
It's just fascinating.
Yeah, I was, I see them on the map now. Okay, I looked at, okay, they have on the visit page where it shows the farmhouse and 200-year-old barn. Wow.
Yeah.
But it shows their proximity to the coast there. I didn't realize it. I mean, it's like right on the water.
They are.
So.
They're just right there. It's, so it's really, and then they're going to be in Portland too, which again is right on the water, but she seems quite excited about the possibilities of what's going to happen with the Portland location.
Well, you're looking at a, I guess, a major airport. I drove through Portland before on I-95 in that area, and it's amazing.
I've been to Bangor many years ago, and it is beautiful. But I came in across from Vermont, not up to Portland. So,
okay, yeah, I kind of went. I see how that goes. Okay, yeah, that'll put them in a good proximity to a major airport. I don't know if Augusta, Maine is a major airport, but not a bad location at all. Good place to be. But I didn't realize they were like right that close to the water line. That's like right there.
I didn't realize either. I started to look at it, and they are right on the water, which has to be a major influence for controlling the weather. But then I don't know, up in Maine, maybe not.
Don't know.
The pictures they had too. I don't know if you got a chance to look at the pictures. There's some lot of neat events and stuff they do there. So.
Oh yeah, yeah, definitely good site. A lot of good, very very picturesque out there too. So
yeah.
As I was typing out on Twitter a lot of my notes and stuff, I got a like from 10K Bottles on Twitter. Liked one of our posts out there. I didn't hear about them before, and I looked on they do blogging and all kinds of cool stuff. It says Discovering Wine One Bottle at a Time, and they do a blog as well. 10kbottles.com is the blog. Very cool site out of Colorado. So thank you for liking the post. It's very interesting. But it's always good to get someone, especially the people who are being followed by, you know, over 1,000 people. It's like, oh, good.
Yeah, that is always good. Yeah, someone thank you for listening to us.
Follow them back. They follow me. I'm going to follow them back.
There you go.
So
maybe you can find something we can end up talking about too through them. I mean, that's, you know.
Yeah, they got quite a few articles here that's kind of. And they got a great picture on the main page. It's just amazing. The rolling hills and vineyard and just some great pictures on it, that's for sure. I'm looking through some of the articles. But anyway, so thank you for doing that. And yeah, it's good call. God, I got a lot of notes on here.
Quite a few too. Yeah, but you know, exciting.
Yeah.
Up there, and you know, it'd be nice to go up and. I have to chuckle again about the raccoons and turkey eating the grapes. That's devastating. I can imagine how their jaws must have hit the floor when they walked out there and noticed that the vineyard was stripped.
Oh, yeah.
Because of the raccoons and turkeys.
You got your first batch, you know, is coming up out of the ground or whatever, your first crop, and it's like, oh, this is going to be great. You know, we're getting somewhere. And then all of a sudden it's gone. You know,
it's gone.
What?
Oh, man.
I can't imagine.
I mean, you know, when I lost my vineyard during the hurricanes, I sat out there and cried. But that's just, you know, same thing with that. They probably stood there and cried. I mean, it's just unbelievable.
Yeah. that's devastating. Through a stupid rodent that very clever.
They are clever.
That's a little rat.
Stand up on their back legs and just pick all of them too. I mean that.
Oh, sure. I'm surprised they didn't bring their own bags or something and just
Maybe they did. That's how they finished it all off one night.
They got little burlap sacks.
Yeah, throw it over their shoulders, take it back.
Yep. Yeah, we got this. I bet they weren't joking. They weren't laughing about it before, but oh my gosh!
Yeah.
And then I saw the pictures of the nets. I wasn't imagining that they draped the nets over like that. I never saw that before. That's kind of interesting.
And they pull it out, too. You notice a lot of times when we look at nets and we see pictures, it's just there. But these are pulled out a ways from it, so the raccoon won't reach in through the net and grab the grapes.
Wow, that's – oh, God, that's terrible. Clever little things. I guess what time are we at? We're 8:11. That was good talk, though. I enjoyed
it. It was.
You
did good.
We will. You don't have any events coming up this weekend. I think
not
the
this
following
weekend, no.
you have a wine class next Sunday. And I
we
guess
have
you
a festival
have
next week too. Is that next week? Yes, it is.
The 19th. Yeah, we skip this week. Next week. So we'll tell you more about that on the next show on the 17th of March.
Which is St. Patty's Day?
Is it? No.
Yeah. 17th of March, St. Patty's Day. And we got daylight saving time starting this Sunday.
Yes. Yes. So move your clock whichever way you're supposed to move it and be happy.
Spring forward and fall back. So you spring forward.
Yes. Yeah. Spring forward, jump ahead an hour and then jump back in October? I don't know.
Yeah, October. Also,
that's Sunday.
The 14th, Orthodox Lent starts. So. Whether you're Orthodox or not, it's a good reason to have another bottle of wine.
Yes. So anytime's a good reason. Okay. Very good. And I got to get over there sometime. I have like 4 bottles of wine I got to bring over to you from Texas.
Wow.
I haven't. I need to. Because I don't know if you work there regular now or if you're like, you know, because you're a big celebrity, you don't have to work as much.
I do.
At least to somebody else, I don't know.
yeah, I do. I still work just as much. But I'm there every day. I'll be there every day. I get to do some bottling now. She was talking about bottling coming up. I've got some bottling coming up. And so I'm going to be bottling probably starting next week, and for the next couple of weeks, I'll be spending some time doing a lot of bottling. So,
okay. I'll have to stop by sometime. And they're sitting on the counter just waiting to be consumed.
Bring them over, and I'll give you some some spice for your trip. Yeah.
Oh, God. This is going to kill me. I got a lot of wine. The only one that I'm really interested in is the chocolate, and I've been drinking that one like it's water. I mean, I just okay, that's good.
Yeah.
Before I know what am I doing?
Need to get a bottle of that maple syrup blueberry.
Oh yeah,
that sounds good.
Not imagine. man, that does.
Really. So.
All right. Well, we'll talk the next show, the 17th, and 7 p.m. on Blog Talk Radio, and we'll see if we have any guests come on or anything. We'll
if
let
I
you know.
Find somebody here, and I'll let you know. I'll let you know before I fell down this one. That was horrible of me, but
that was good. Got the information. That's fine. All right. We'll see everybody next week. Thank you for tuning in again this week and every week. And we'll see you all next Thursday on the 17th. Thanks for tuning in. Drink wine. There's plenty of things going on between now and the next week. To any kind of reason, just drink.
Drink.
It's within reason.
And
but,
you get over your cold, too. Take those antibiotics and get feeling better.
Oh, I can't wait.
<Can imagine. laughs>
Thank you. Yeah, well, thank you. We'll see y'all.
Thank you all very
we'll
much.
Thank you. Have a good one.
This concludes tonight's broadcast of All About Wine with your host, Ron, Vice President and General Manager of Florida States Winery. Florida States Winery is located at 25241 State Road 52 in Land O'Lakes, Florida, 4 miles west of Interstate 75 or east of U.S. 19 and U.S. 41. For more information on Florida States Winery, visit the website at floridaestateswines.com or call area code 813-996-2113. The email address is corp@flune.com. That's corp@flewn.com. For more information on All About Wine and future shows, please like us on Facebook at facebook.com/allaboutwinebtr or visit our website at allaboutwinebtr.com. Archived shows are available as a free download on iTunes and on our show page at blogtalkradio.com/allaboutwine. Thank you for listening. We'll see you next time on All About Wine.